You're listening to the UCB Long Form Conversations podcast, in-depth conversations with performers and teachers from the best alternative comedy theater on the planet. This podcast is modeled on the improv form La Ronde, so the guest of our last episode becomes the host of this episode, and today's guest will become the host of our next episode. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center.
Warning. What you're about to hear is an extremely nerdy conversation about long-form improv comedy.
Welcome to the Long Form Conversations podcast. From New York, I'm Beth Slack. I was a guest on the previous episode, but today I'm back as your host for another round of our ongoing La Ronde. Today, my guest is Stefan Chouette, who improv fans might know from the Lloyd Team Ronin, the longtime Herald Team Some Kid, the new Herald Team Party City. He also was an improviser with the UCB Tour Co., and he is currently appearing in The Place We Live, which is a show running over at the Hell's Kitchen Theater.
That is correct.
Great. So welcome to the podcast. It's so great to have you here.
Thank you for welcoming, Beth. It's great to be here.
Yay. And so we were on Ronin together for like a very, very hot second.
True. We're talking about that just shortly before, a little behind the scenes. It was April, right? And then I think, we were there. It was like 5 months or whatever.
Yeah.
I want to say,
and right? Then you, after only 5 months on Lloyd Night, made the big jump to Herald, which is amazing.
That's true. It was like at a random phone. I was on my bed, like watching my laptop, which is my TV. And then I got a random phone call from a 212 number. And I'm like, oh, this isn't a creditor. Usually they don't have a 212, precursor area code. Picked it up and it was Shannon. And she's like, hey, you want to be on Herald Night? Like, sure, gladly. And then I got to join Some Kid and it was great. And I was on Some Kid for about 2.5 years.
That's so amazing.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun.
I mean, and I think that's really great. Like to be on a team for 2.5 years means that you are able to really build that team.
Yeah. And I was lucky because when I joined that team, Some Kid, I knew all of them except for like one.
Oh, wow.
Because we played together before in many different capacities, like ASPs and classes and just indie shows and also like on Torco and things like that. Because a lot of those performers on that team were part of the same Torco generation that I was a part of. So I joined them and it was, took a couple shows and I just like walked right on in and it was great. And there was definitely a rapport there, which was nice.
That's amazing. that's great. And I actually would like to travel back in time a bit.
Sure, let's go back.
So we have seen that ultimately you end up on Herald Night. Yay!
Yay. Anyway, goodbye, have fun, subscribe, or whatever.
So how did you get your start in improv? Like, when did you do it in college, high school, all of that? What is your origin story?
My origin story? Well, I've loved improv my whole life, all the way back to the watching Whose Line Is It Anyway? Mm-hmm. I was part of the middle school improv troupe. We had a middle school improv troupe.
Oh, wow.
I did it in seventh grade. I did it in part of my theater class because my theater teacher at the time did a lot of improv. This was in the late 90s. Did a lot of improv, and his teacher was like a Second City founder or something.
Oh, wow.
I think he studied with Paul Sills. I have to double check, but I think that's true. So I think they went to the same. He was a student at the school he was a professor at. So we did a lot of improv games. I loved it. And then after class one day, he's like, hey, I'm doing a school group. Do you want to be a part of it? And I was part of a group called Drip for 2 years in school, 8th and 9th grade. We were like the theater kids that also did improv.
Were you doing short form at this point?
Short form.
Okay.
Yeah, short form. Short form, I believe, is the gateway drug to long form. I think a lot of people go straight to long form, and it's cool. I'm envious of that, but I'm very happy with my short form days because to me that's like – because you watch Whose Line Is It Anyway, you're like, oh, that's what improv is.
Yeah.
People on SNL must have been doing that because you watch SNL. It's like, oh, they're from these improv companies. Whose Line Is It Anyway is improv. Therefore, that's what improv is.
Yeah, that math adds up.
Uh-huh. And then when you get the Truth in Comedy, the very first book, like the great book, the Bible, the improv Bible, the old school Bible, you can interpret that like it's a short form exercise at the Herald, the way they describe the Herald. That could be like an opening game plus games in between scenes and stuff like that. And I think a lot of troops did that. I think we did that.
Oh, wow.
And then I moved in my new high school. We had a high school group and then went to college. I was part of the college group called the Improv Thing.
Where did you go to college?
I went to UNC Greensboro in North Carolina. I a small little hidden gem, if I don't say so myself. But it's not UNC Chapel Hill. It's not the big one. And also North Carolina, UNC Wilmington has a bigger bravado to it, even though I don't run into too many UNCW alumni around what I do. But I was there, and I did the college group there, and it was a lot of fun. And then we did shows at a church, which was fun.
Wow.
And it was like a weird community center church. The priest had like a cross and a peace symbol on with the necklace.
Ooh,
so he's like one of those hip priests, you know? Make religion cool again. And then on the main street, Tate Street, it was like a community center. And all it was just a bunch of old sofas they put in a row. And we would just perform. Like, we weren't allowed to touch the altar. That was the rule. Or at least we weren't allowed to touch stuff on the altar. And then we performed in front of a bunch of people on couches. And that was my college improv experience.
Okay, I love that. I love the idea of like a hippie community of Christians.
Yeah, it was great. I don't know if all the audience were Christians. They might have been. But it was a great crowd. They came out. And that was a mix of short form and long form. That's when I started sort of doing long form in college. And I loved it. We would do like short form half, first half, long form, second half. But I learned at UCB later that that was like not even real long form. It was like mid form at best. Mm-hmm. I didn't really start real long form until New York. But anyway, fast forward a couple of years. I worked, I think I always wanted to go to Chicago and do mm-hmm. acting and improv and all that stuff there. I was always going to Chicago. Ever since middle school, I'm going to Chicago. But I got a gig right out of college as a puppeteer in Buffalo. So I did that for about a year. And that was a touring gig. And then the head guy loved UCB because he went to college in New York. And when we go to New York on tour, he'd be like, come on, we're going to UCB tonight. It's $5, cheap show. It's very fun. We went and I saw it and I loved it. And it's like, this is amazing.
Do you remember the first show that you saw?
Oh, of course. I remember like it was yesterday. It was in 2007.
Okay.
So 11 years ago now. And it was Nights of Our Lives, hosted by David Martin, who hosts that show for a long time. I don't know if he's around much anymore. And we had stories from Chris Gethard, and that's how I was introduced to Chris Gethard. He told his story of going to Scared Straight when he was in eighth grade, and he showed a picture of his eighth grade school photo, which I don't know if you've seen it. I think it's in his book now. He's like a little kid in like a suit and like a hat. And he was like an assistant on the Scared Straight program. It was the most scariest experience of his life. For those of you who don't know, Scared Straight is when troubled students get brought into a real prison and prisoners talk to them to scare them straight. And he was just a volunteer. Like, he wasn't one of the troubled students. But he probably was like a scarred for life. And then John Flynn, who was a great guy, who was a bartender, used to be Chelsea for a long time. He lives in L.A. now. Really funny guy. He told a great story of teaching English in Taiwan for a year. And how in Taiwan, he's a redhead. He's a tall, sort of pasty redhead. And in Taiwan, that's what ghosts look like. A story of like a kid on a train thinking he was a ghost or something. That was really funny. And then I think Anthony King did one of the stories too. And he talked about him and his roommate decided to get a Lady of the Night one night and one of those ads in the back of like, the Village Voice. Talked about that experience. And then the other one was Elliot Glazer, which is Alana Glazer's older brother. Mm-hmm. He talked about coming out. He's gay. He's talking about coming out. And he when he was a kid, when he was in high school, he bought a book that guided you on how to come out, which is a ridiculous sort of concept. Maybe. I don't know. Maybe it's not. And he just read passages from it, and it was just hilarious. It was stuff like – it was like a PSA on how to do it properly. So he just took the book. I wish I could remember what the book was. I'd love to read it. And he just taught – and him and John Flynn reenacted, like, sequences from it of what they're supposed to do. It's just very, very funny. And I'm like, this is a theater? I'm like, this is the best thing in the world. It was $5. Everyone here is young. And everyone here, it's just – it's exactly the type of comedy because I've always been a big comedy nerd. I'm like, this is it. This is where I want to go. So then eventually I moved to New York and did UCB.
Oh, great. So when – when did you start classes? Do you remember?
It was a while. It takes me forever. I'm a little scaredy boy. So I wanted to be at UCB forever. Like, I probably should have skipped college. I look back on my life and be like, if nice, I should have probably gone straight to, like, improv school when I was 18. So I've always wanted to do it. And then, but I ended up going to school and to the theater, and then I got gigs, like the touring gig.
It's like
a children's puppets. With puppets. Children's touring is a common first gig out of theater college.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Did you go to theater school?
I didn't. Oh. I trained to be an opera singer.
That's a different kind. You still go on tour though first, right?
With, yeah, you would do like regional
theaters.
Yeah.
Or vocal performance. I know at my school, I think that's what it was called.
Yes.
Yeah.
I have a bachelor's in music and vocal performance.
There you go.
So did you get a degree in theater?
I have a degree in theater, yeah.
Okay.
But I never finished, so it's a lie. I don't have a degree in theater. I studied it for a while, but actually never. I left school early.
Like, first, stop lying, mm-hmm. Stefan, because this podcast is forever.
True.
We cannot check all this information.
I studied. No, you can't. Who can fund? No, you can't. You have to pay for that. No, I studied theater for mm-hmm. 3 years. I never finished. It was only for 3 years.
Okay.
Because it was cool, but my classes, I mean, I should have done more. I've always been like, I should have done more theater classes. A lot of the general education classes.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, I don't do math and science anymore. I love math and science. I have nothing against it. But I really should be training to do what I want to do. And I just feel like I wasn't getting that. I was really antsy. And I'm like, I want to go work. So I went and I got that gig at the
Buffalo. Yeah, you started working. That's great.
Because I'm like, all I do is go to school another year and just do this then. I'll just start a year early.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that. And then I worked at a theater in Long Island for 2.5 years. And that was supposed to be a summer internship, but I loved it so much I just stayed for so long. And Long Island is closer than Buffalo, so I could take the train into the city and see shows.
Yeah.
And this was like 08, 09, 2010, that kind of thing. And I'd come in and see shows a lot. And I'd always be like, maybe I can take a class once a week. I never did that. But then I'm like, all right, what am I doing in my life? I'm like 25 now, and I work in a theater office. I'm not really an actor like I want to mm-hmm. be. So I like dropped everything, moved to New York, and started classes and did the whole actor thing. That's what I've been doing now since 2011 is when I moved here.
So, okay, great.
Yeah, so that's my origin story.
It's a good origin story. I like it.
Maybe a little too long, too long-winded.
not at all. Great. So I think something that I kind of have questions about that I'd love to pick your brain about is how you think having trained for an actor impacts improv.
Yeah.
Impacts your improv, impacts improv in general. And I think that there are a lot of people who have not done training who are doing improv and are very successful. And then there are a lot of people who have done training who are successful. What do you think? What are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, it's a good question. And I think it's a case-by-case basis. I think theater training is very important. And I stress that. On my team, some kid, I think of the 8 of us, I think all of us had either a theater background or like an English degree with a writing background,
mm-hmm.
which is also an important part of improv is the writerly skills as opposed to the actorly stuff too. And it's like then I go to coach and it's a group of 8 people and they're like working in an office and they've never done – this is like their only experience of performance. And it's just like, you know, there's a big – I mean it depends on the teams, but a lot of times the people I perform with have some sort of a performance extra with them.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they don't, they spend a lot of time writing or learning English or like they have a degree in film, it's sort of the other one. They have some sort of creative background or some sort of creative education or outlet, like, you know, opera degree. Exactly.
Yeah.
Perfect example of that. And I think that helps a lot because that's getting comfortable on stage performing in front of people. And that's the most important thing when it comes to base reality, which is a very important part of improv is baseline reality. And what baseline reality is being able to comfortably present some sort of expected circumstances to the audience.
Mm-hmm.
So like, oh, I know what that is. I get that. I 100% see what that is. So if it's 2 people working in an office, like, oh, I see that. And if the more performance experience you have, the easier that is for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then you break those expectations. That's what game is. And so for people that have problems doing the baseline reality, they have to work a little harder. They have to practice a lot of improv. With that being said, improv can be the best sort of acting training you can get. If improv school is your only school, that can work for some people.
Mm-hmm.
There are great, you know, Dave Pasquese, who's a really great old school improviser. He's part of the TJ and Dave duo. He's been doing it for a long time. I don't think he's ever taken an acting class. And he's only done improv classes. And he is a very successful actor, books a lot of great work. And I think his first Goodman show he ever booked, this is a big theater in Chicago. It's like mm-hmm. their version of Broadway. Years ago, the director's like, make sure you don't take an acting class. So he told him, it's like, I want you just the way you are. That's why I hired you. I want you to be I like the way the improviser acts. And a lot of great actors have improviser roots. Like mm-hmm. someone last night was talking about how great Laurie Metcalf was. Like, yeah, Laurie Metcalf is great. I think she's also an old school improviser. I think she was at Second City a long time ago. I could be wrong.
Ooh.
I have to double check that. I know she was at Steppenwolf. But I wouldn't be surprised if she at least took improv classes. Because people from the Chicago roots, that's sort of an important part of Chicago, is taking those improv classes. And I just think that for like some people, just improv school is good for you. It keeps you natural. And I think a lot of people are looking for that these days.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe there's some bad habits that people with a lot of theater training bring with them, they have to get rid of their performance, their big performance style.
Mm-hmm.
because sometimes for film that doesn't work. So that's why it's sort of a case-by-case basis. It's this calibration. You have to understand there's different mediums. You have to perform for different mediums.
Right.
But my point is like whatever gets you good at base reality.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so interesting. Because I feel like I'm still like a baby in terms of being involved in improv because I've been doing like 5.5 years, which I think on like the scope of an improv career – like maybe I'm like getting into like the groove, but I think because I had done so much performing before, like there was an element of stagecraft that I didn't have to learn. Like I didn't have to learn how to be on stage. I didn't have to learn how to project. I didn't have to learn, some of those like how to be a base reality, how to be doing one things with my hands while doing different things in my head because I grew up doing moderate choreography.
Right,
as
yeah.
Were,
rubbing your belly and tapping your
yeah,
head.
Yeah, like so I think that there is definitely that sort of benefit to having that training.
I think so. I think it's a little bit of a shortcut. It helps you out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I can understand why maybe level one for actors versus level one for non-actors can be a way to start, and then we can merge somehow a couple levels in. Because maybe there can be – yeah, I understand exactly what you're saying.
Yeah.
Like it's I think it does – performance background definitely gives you a little bit of a shortcut. It helps you out a little bit.
Yeah. Well, so you are finding yourself in an interesting place right now in that you've just ended a 2.5 year run with Some Kid and you're starting with a new team.
Yeah, Party City. Yeah.
Have you been on a team with anyone that's on this team before?
No, this is a brand new experience for me. It's really exciting. I've actually coached most of them. Like,
ooh.
I think there's only one person I didn't know that well.
Okay.
Everyone else I knew was via coaching. And my first practice, someone even said, it's like, this is the first time I've not been coached by you in a practice. It's like, yeah, let's do this. This will be fun.
So as you, as a performer going in, you're starting this new thing. How do you calibrate yourself to start a new team? Like, how do you prepare yourself? Like, what are your goals going into a new team?
Well,
a new situation?
My goals are to yes and everybody. Mm-hmm. So when they say, let's do this, I want to be like, yes, let's do that. I don't want to be like, nah, I want to do something else. Whatever they're excited by, I will be excited by as well. Because mm-hmm. I believe the team. I think to be a good teammate, it's important to yes and your teammates off stage as much as on stage. So whatever they want, if someone wants to change a song or wear a costume or something for an opening, I'd be like, yeah, that sounds great. Let's do that. Because that's the whole point of yes anding.
Yeah.
And also half of my team, I think five of us on the team is like their first Herald team. So they're very excited, and I love that excitement. So it's like, cool, I just want to feed into that, and I want everything to be positive with them. And all I can do is with maybe being a Herald a little longer is just give a little bit of my just point of view of being like, let's stick with this coach.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big fan of peer coaches. We have a peer coach right now, someone who's like also on Herald Night coaching us. I'm like, I love veterans, don't get me wrong, but the good thing about peer coach and via my experience is that they're there every week and they give you notes. And mm-hmm. that can be maybe a little more important than a kind of wisdom you can get from a veteran coach. And that's like me just giving that sort of, that's my opinion. And then they're all just like, sure, that sounds great. So the yes and me back as far as stuff like that goes. And then there you go. And then the idea is to make sure we're all comfortable. And then we all get to know each other better so our full comedic voice can shine. Because when you're on a new team, you have to behave yourself a little more. I had a rapport with people I knew. These are new people, so let's create a new rapport and let's mm-hmm. get comfortable with each other and see how that can come out of us over time.
Now, as a coach, if you have a team that is like a new team that's put together, what are like some of the exercises that you would have? That to pick your coach brain a little bit. Like, what would you do is like, how do you get to know each other as players?
Opinions.
Ooh, okay.
How do people feel about things?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of people don't line up on some things. That's fine. That's a good thing. It's not a bad thing. It's just to understand how your teammates feel about things. So I do a lot of different exercises. One of my main exercises is I have people walk around the room and only one person can walk in any given time, but someone should always be moving. And in order to move, you have to say an opinion you have. And what that does is it forces you to be honest and it forces your teammates to catch you at the same time. And we're all doing it together.
Mm-hmm.
So you're in a group of eight and one person's walking, and they say, I feel that Star Wars is overrated or something like that. It's like an opinion they have. And mm-hmm. then the minute they stop with their opinion, they stop walking, someone has to pick it up right away and say, I feel that Facebook is very detrimental to society, you know, mm-hmm. and what all the hot takes you want. There's all sorts of hot takes. And the point of that is that they can get honest in how they feel about things, and also they can feel how comfortable they are being honest in front of others. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's an important part of improv, is to know how to get honest. And also with them, with that, I take those opinions and I start scenes with that. I take those opinions. You have to take someone else's opinion and you have to make it your own. You have to start a scene that way. And then to have fun, I'm like, let's explore opposites. Now take the opposite of that opinion and let's do a scene off that. Mm-hmm. And then what that does is it takes the way your teammates really feel and turns those into character points of view. And then those characters do scene work. And then that's sort of how you, A, get to know each other, and B, start going right into the fact that, oh, yeah, we have to get comfortable with each other and we have to get comfortable being honest with each other. That's mm-hmm. very important. And that's also sort of, it's like a, so it's got two purposes. Get to know your teammates, like how they feel about things. Like, oh, that person doesn't like chocolate ice cream. Interesting, you know, something like that. or like, oh, that person's a huge Trump supporter or something like, something like that.
Wow, the things you might discover in this exercise.
Yeah, I haven't discovered that. But, you know, maybe if I did it on the road, I probably would. And then there you go. And then that's how you get started. And then over time, you just get more comfortable with each other and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's an interesting exercise. I've not heard of that one before.
Yeah, I ripped it off from Kevin Mullaney, who's an old school guy. He used to run the school here, but he's been in Chicago for a while now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Mm-hmm. I rip off everything I do. I take it from someone else.
Great. I'm glad you're being honest about that.
Always.
Yes. So I think you do a ton of coaching, right?
Yeah. I'm a big old coach.
Do you? Great.
I'm the biggest coach in New York City, baby.
Wow.
No, I just coach sometimes. I coach sometimes.
As someone who coaches sometimes, are there things that you're seeing in practices that you want people to be aware of, like improvisers? I know, like for a long time, a lot of it was like don't be ironically detached,
sure.
because that just takes people out of the scene and doesn't let the meat of that scene kind of get bit into. That wasn't like a real sense. You'd have to like
the meat of the scene getting bit into. 100%. I that's my biggest note. I still have way too much fun as a performer. I'm way too jokey. My base reality is something I always work. You work at base reality forever. So the biggest thing for me is always base reality. Mm-hmm. I'll take a level one group, a level four group, an advanced study group, and I'll do the same exercises, and it's the same thing.
What's a good exercise to help people find their base reality?
Well, my favorite thing, it's such a simple thing, is like, hey, let's do a scene. Your job is to make sure no one laughs. That's the goal. That's it. And like, be boring. Make sure this is a very realistic scenario. I'll give them like, let's do a job interview. Hey, let's sit down, do a dinner, and one of you just graduated, or one of you got a promotion. This is a congratulatory dinner, or like, I don't know, anything. And then they do it, and then them putting so much effort into making it as realistic as possible. That's where the best game comes from. And mm-hmm. then the dirty little secret is then afterwards and be like, wasn't that a fun thing that we can exploit and explore? Versus trying to think of one ahead of time and trying to push it and find it, that gets in your way.
Mm-hmm.
It's best to let the game find you. That's mm-hmm. sort of that's the muscles we have to build. And that leads to sort of the next step, which is I think game is a recognition
mm-hmm.
as opposed to something you write. You know, it's just I recognize that to be fun. Let's do something with that. Let's turn that into something.
Yeah.
And that's sort of how the game can find you.
Okay. Well, let's dive into this game thing a little bit because, I mean, I think it's the $10 billion question.
Oh,
and,
sure.
You know, Matt Starr interviewed me in the last one, and he said, and I think I agree, like if you line everybody up on Harold and Lloyd and ask them mm-hmm. what game is to them, it would be all different answers. So you said earlier that like the base reality, the game is kind of like the thwarting the expectation of what would happen in that base reality.
Breaking expectations. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have more kind of thoughts about game?
No thoughts.
That was it? Great, we've solved game.
Yeah, I can explain it a billion different ways. I like explaining it different ways to different people.
Mm-hmm.
So because I know one of those phrases is going to stick with different people. So because I know I've had many different coaches over the years explain to me differently, and I've absorbed all of it,
mm-hmm.
and I regurgitate all of it so that one style one will fit with style with one type of player and one style for another type of player. You know, Alex Bird does this great workshop where he discusses game as stimulus and response. You know, your job, let's say we're in a scene, Beth, you provide stimulus to my mm-hmm. response. Say I'm a barber who does way too much TMI.
Mm-hmm.
So your stimulus would be base reality. you have to just talk to me like I'm cutting your hair. You have to be like, well, what happened to you this Sunday?
Yeah.
That's just my response would be I say something that's way too inappropriate. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I don't know. What would be a really cool game move? Just something that's inappropriate. You know, it's like, yeah. I disowned my son this weekend or something. Like something that's way maybe a little too much for the barber session. And it's a stimulus response. Another way is just, I mean, there's the book definition, right? That's an unusual thing or a fun thing you can find based on your circumstances, and then you exploit that and explore that. I just like to keep it simple. Offer the audience expectations via base reality. Now, base reality can be weird. Mm-hmm. Base reality can be vampires.
Mm-hmm.
Base reality can be, aliens on the moon. That doesn't matter. Just give me moon life. Make sure that's the base reality.
Mm-hmm.
And then give me the unusual thing on top of that, whatever that may be. Usually it's one person or two people or the situation they're in that's a little bit off what you'd expect.
Mm-hmm.
When I coach a group, I'm like, imagine it's just fried chicken. The base reality is fried chicken. You just dip a little hot sauce on there. The hot sauce is the game. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Or whatever it is, the dressing on the salad for a healthier analogy is like it's like raw salad's base reality. What's the dressing? The mm-hmm. dressing is the game. So you have to give me the salad first, though. I'm not just getting mm-hmm. raw dressing. And then we can put some dressing on it.
Ooh.
Yeah.
For all those health nuts out there.
Yeah.
When you're dressing your salad.
I usually do the fried chicken analogy, but we can do salad.
But that just shows that you're like a good teacher, that you're able to change the examples to
whatever
speak
food
to
you
different
want.
Audiences.
Whatever you want on your burger, whatever you want on your pizza, whatever.
Okay. Oh, that's so great. I think that's – I like that you steal everything and then put your own spin on it.
100%. And it's just one dressing. You don't put ranch and Italian on the salad. It's just Italian.
That would be crazy. Ranch and Italian?
Yeah. I mean, I think I have done that in my past. But in scene work wise, like ranch can be small amounts if it's a sub game at best.
Mm-hmm.
It's got to be just one thing, one sauce only.
So then would be like having a carrot on your salad be like a small character game? Like
sure.
Is our base salad just lettuce?
Sure, 100%.
And then small character games might be like a radish.
Uh-huh.
Or a carrot.
Or like a radish or a carrot or like maybe some anchovies or something like that.
Okay, great. Yeah. So with the fried chicken, it would perhaps be like celery.
Yeah, 100%. A little blue cheese.
With blue cheese.
Uh-huh.
Or a spicy.
And that's
sauce.
Like, oh, this isn't like so in our barber scene, it's like in addition to me being TMI, you're also – Reba McEntire or something.
So then I would sing all of the questions to you in like a country western.
It's not unusual for Reba McEntire to get a haircut. It's just fun, and that can be a fun sub game we put on top of that. So it's not just a blank person giving me a haircut. It's Reba asking for like, I'm doing the TNN Awards this weekend. So mm-hmm. doll me up, sugar or something, and then like. So that'd be me doing that. That's just a sub game. That's not the main game.
Okay.
There's nothing unusual about Reba McEntire getting a haircut. It's just fun and colorful and it's great. But then the main game would be I'm a TMI person.
Mm-hmm.
Then you'd have to respond to it via Reba McEntire would.
Right.
Yeah. So those of you that don't know, Reba McEntire is a famous country singer.
That's true.
She's had many comedies. She knows comedy. She's had a lot of sitcoms.
Didn't she have a television show called Reba for many years?
And she had one like this past year, I think. Didn't she?
Did she?
I think she's on a sitcom now.
I haven't kept up with Reba's career.
She's had a much better comedy career than I have. She's a country singer.
Well, I think we've both gone wrong there. We did not pursue becoming country singers to get our shows. This, apropos of nothing, when you're doing a Herald, are you super into beats or group games? Like, what's your bread and butter?
Oh, I like group games. Ooh. I mean, I'll do everything because the point of a Herald is to do everything.
Yeah.
I've always loved group games.
Yeah.
I love nice and silly and fun. Silly's the best.
Silly. What's like
fun, simple, dumb.
Fun, simple, dumb.
Yeah.
Do you have like what's like your dream? Is it like all peas in a pod, or does it matter as long as it's fun, simple, dumb?
It doesn't matter. I like peas in a pod. I like any type of group game. I'm fine with everybody coming here, as long as it's bonkers and ridiculous. I'm fine with it. I like weird organic group games. I like anything. Presentational group games. I'll do that.
Mm-hmm.
I like it all. I did a group game practice the other day where the session was calculator and it came out and just said, calculators are fun. Beep, boop, boop. And then I just wanted everybody to do the same thing and that would have been, that was fun. We were just on calculators. That's great. And I think for some reason that's the beauty about improv. Just the idea of doing something with a group is like rewarding and
mm-hmm.
surprising. People like that.
Mm-hmm.
Even if it's like, let's get together and improvise singing a song together. As simple as that may seem, watching it is really rewarding.
Yeah.
So let's just do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I love that. I love group games, too.
Me, too.
They're just the best. So traveling back in time again.
Yeah, sure.
When I was briefly doing my research about you, because I did do research about you.
Yeah.
You had been in many, many ASPs.
Yeah, I did five. Yeah.
That could
Is
be.
Is that a lot? I think people have done more than that.
Well, yeah. There's always people who have done more. There's always people
who have done
less.
I think Chris Scott's done like 15 or something.
Well, I'm not interviewing Chris Scott today.
No, not yet.
I really like Chris Scott. He coached me once in one group, and he was great.
He's the best. I love Chris Scott.
So of those ASPs, is there one that really stuck out to you, like a form that you just fell in love with, or you're like, I want to do more with this, or something that you feel like you learned the most from? I know lots of broad questions, but.
They were all great. I'd say my two big ones, my first one and my last one. My first one was the improvised play, and that was a lot of fun. Great crew of folks.
I would have loved to have taken that.
Yeah, and I love theater. And Brandon Gardner, he's also a big theater fan. And it was great. We had to read plays, and we came in and improvised a style of a play.
Mm-hmm.
And it was great. And I actually sub-coach or whatever. I'm not the main coach of a pit house team, and they do the improvised play. So it's good that I can now use that knowledge and give it to a group. And they've done great things with it. And I think it's a lot of fun, and it has a lot of mileage to it. And that was cool because that was sort of my first – that was like my big – I remember during our shows I made like a press packet and, we had the posters.
Yeah.
And it was just like a big show, and it was like my first UCB show, and it was fun. It was called The Play is the Thing specifically.
Okay.
This was like 2013, I think, so a few years ago. They've done a few improvised plays since. And then – and that was just a lot of fun, and I just remember really enjoying it.
Mm-hmm.
And then my last one – was like 2015, I think, maybe 2016, was The Convergence.
Okay.
Which was a mono scene, which is Kevin Hines' one, a mono scene thing that two mono scenes sort of merge over time.
Oh, yeah.
It goes back and forth, and slowly you start to realize why one is affecting the other. And that's great. And I'll use that and run that as a practice for a Spokane, which is like the most popular form in the indie scene right now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's been for a while. And it's just a great way to listen to others and then do your own thing and slowly let things inspire you and sort of let just the snowball keep rolling.
Mm-hmm.
And it's great. It's a great outlet for real creativity, I think. It's a lot of fun. And both those classes were great. Convergence was a great group of folks.
Yeah.
They were all fun. I got to know them. And a few of those people are now on my current Herald team. Because Rebecca Bentley was in that class. Chris Scott was in that class. Chris Scott, although he's not on my Herald team. And then Stephen Paletta was in that class.
Mm-hmm.
He's on my Herald team now. That's where I got to meet Stephen Paletta. And I think that's it. But still three people is... From an ASP from 3 years ago.
That's crazy.
Yeah, that we're on Herald Night together.
That's so fun.
Yeah, great crew.
Do you have a favorite form? I mean, obviously we all hold the Herald up above as the golden sky reaching thing.
Sure.
But if you had your druthers, like what would be the form that you just love playing the most?
Honestly, I like an open form. To me, I like to just take a suggestion and run with it. And then if it becomes – I did a show the other night where it essentially became kind of like a larger macro. It was supposed to be like a Spokane, but it became a macro scene of just a bunch of people in different apartments in the same apartment complex. I loved it not because of the form, but because that's what we found and that's the energy that it was leading towards. I'm a big hippy-dippy when it comes to that kind of stuff. I like to just go out there not knowing what to do because to me I think that's like the rawest improv. It's real making it up. So you give me a word, and then as a group, we see what energy is. If it's a mono scene, let's do a mono scene. And I love mono scenes. Those are probably, as far as a structured form goes, I would have to say probably I'm a mono scene guy. I think that's where I lean more towards because it's, theatrical and so forth. And I just like the idea of being able to find something on the go. I mean, like, this is working. And then patterns, my brain works in patterns, I think all our brains do.
Mm-hmm.
And just being able to, these patterns, and just, like, recognizing the patterns and letting them come back and going back to this apartment because that's what they're like. That's how they would respond to thing X and so forth. And I enjoy that. And I enjoy the idea that next week we wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
I would hate if as a team we got into a pattern where we just did that over and over again. I would prefer us to make sure we felt something different next time. Because whatever the energy lends itself to.
Wow.
Yeah. So it's not a great answer to your question because I said, like, no form. But
that's
we're all
choice.
Forms. Yeah.
It's like when people are like, what's your favorite color? And I'm like, black. And technically, it's like the absence of color.
100%. I'm in the same boat.
I stand by it.
Yeah.
Are you part of an indie team? Are you active on indie teams right now where, like, that happened? Or this was just, like, a rando show?
I played on the weekend the other night. So Yeah. I was on What I Did for I was invited to be on What I Did for Love, and that's what we did, which was fun.
Oh, that's so fun.
Yeah. And a lot of us knew each other from also Torco. We had a rapport. So it was like riding a bike, playing with, mm-hmm. with old friends. And it was a lot of fun. It was a fun show.
That's yeah. great.
Yeah, I would like to play more indie. I've always been trying to do like a two-prof show or something mm-hmm. because I want to improvise more.
Yeah.
Just more, like a few times a week. I've always wanted. I'm addicted to it.
Yeah.
And I just don't get – I need to organize that and get that together. I just – you know, I did like – I did the telephone show the other night, which is another big indie show, and that was a lot of fun. And I love to do Kaleidoscope again and things like mm-hmm. that. So I try to get out there and do shows as much as I can, as much as time allows.
Yeah. Time is hard.
Oh, 100%. I want more time.
yeah, as always. Sorry, I'm sort of like jumping all over the place.
Yeah, no worries.
This is like a no structure interview.
Yeah, and an open form interview. Just so this is long form conversations. This is open form conversation.
So obviously you've just started a new Herald team, and they've just announced the new Lloyd teams, and you know, auditioning for Lloyd and Herald is stressful for everybody. And I wondered if you have any kind of like advice about the process. Obviously, as we spoke about earlier, you leaped so quickly from Lloyd to Herald, which is amazing.
Well, let's go back again. I was on Torco for a while first. That was my first experience at UCB. When I fall of 2014, I got a random email to come to the Beast at like Friday morning at 10 a.m. or something like that. So I go, and then me and a couple people had to do a Torco show for Shannon and Brandon. That's it. Just two people mm-hmm. in that space. And we did a show, and it was like fun and weird. And because, you know, it's not, doing improv in front of not much of an audience is hard because you can't feed off their energy. And I thought I did like, okay, not great. And then the next day I got an email saying, congrats, you're on Torco. And I was like, oh, I was so happy. And I was like, that was my first big thing. And I did that for a few months. But, like, you're not on the website and you don't do any shows at the theater. So, like, I toured the colleges, a lot of colleges and things like that. And I loved it. But, like, to colleges, I was a UCB improviser. Mm-hmm. But here, no one recognized me as, like, a UCB. No one knew who I was. No one recognized me as a UCB improviser here.
So you were, like, that's walking around like a regular person.
Like a regular, no, like a plebe. I just think it's funny. I just think it's funny. Yeah. That's still a thing today. There's still Torco still has teammates, I think. Their only team is Torco at that moment, which is great. So when I got on Lloyd, it was like, oh, yay. It's like I'm on a house team here so I can play at my home theater now too, mm-hmm. the theater I love, as opposed to just sort of being on the road show. And that was a lot of fun. But although it was my first Lloyd team, I had already been playing for about like 7-8 months, like for like mm-hmm. doing Torco for a while.
Yeah.
So I wasn't like a fresh. I felt pretty comfortable in that.
Yeah.
Space. You were there. I mean, we can talk about Ronan. This is Ronan I'm talking about.
Yes.
Yeah. And I felt, you know, that was a really fun team. And I think for a lot of us, it was like our second team.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was quote unquote my second team.
Yeah.
Because I did Torco, where the rest of them, I think, were already on Lloyd Night the year prior.
Correct.
Yeah, and was that your first team?
That was my first team.
Right. But you were on a house team somewhere else, right?
Yeah, I had been on a musical house team over at the Magnet,
right.
Which was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
But weirdly, I think of them as very separate entities. I think that, like, I just think of the Herald as, like, its own beast. Yeah, and the musical stuff is, like, its own beast.
100%.
Yeah, and I felt, when I was put on Ronan, like, I felt so intimidated because I felt like everyone was so veteran and everyone just felt so comfortable on the stage. And I felt like, I mentioned this last week, like, when I was not put on a team, like, I was a mess and it was, like, therapy and talking about it. And then mm-hmm. I was put on a team and I was like, oh, my God, what does this mean? Like, I'm not emotionally prepared.
Welcome to the club, Beth. We all are.
But I feel like you hit it very well.
I was a wreck. I was an emotional wreck like everybody else.
Yeah.
Because it's like, okay, I'm on Lloyd Knight. You know, don't fuck this up.
Yeah.
Do good.
Yeah.
And like, you know, sometimes I would do good and then sometimes I'd do bad. And when you do good, you feel like $1 million. When you do bad, you feel like a pile of trash.
Yeah.
And it's high highs, low lows. It's not healthy, but it's how the performers, it's performers mentality.
Yeah.
But yeah, and it was great. And that was a good crew of folks. And I felt really comfortable there. I don't know, like, I mean, you feel comfortable there?
I did. It took me a little bit of time for my head to catch up to my heart.
Okay,
like,
cool.
I was so excited to be there, but then I also just felt so intimidated.
Right.
Because it was so many, like, really, I mean, I think that you're a very, like, strong, aggressive player in the best way.
Thank you.
And it was, like, a team of really strong players who had clear voices. Like, they had found their improv voice, and I think that, like, I was still trying to find my, like, improv voice on a house team.
Okay. Well, I would say very funny. We were in the Lydia Hensley SH together, right?
Yes.
A lot of good people were in that.
That was my first Ash ever.
Is that true?
It is true.
You were very good in that Ash. I remember being like, wow, you're very funny.
Thank you. What I remember from that Ash is there was one week where we did a Herald that I never stepped out for the whole thing.
Really?
It's true.
Oh, I don't remember that.
I remember leaving that class and just being like, oh my God, what am I doing? Like, that was an amazing class.
That was a great class. Like, look at Bob Wolfhoff was in that class. Beth Slack was in that class. I was in that class. There was a lot of good people
in that
class.
Jesse Neal was in that class.
Yes,
because I remember
was class.
He was on Lloyd, and I remember being like,
yeah,
he was
the big guy. He was like the big guy.
There was someone from Lloyd Knight in this class.
Whenever I saw, this is also,
Ed.
Whenever I loved being Ed, who's the best.
Who then joined, he was one of the people who replaced
Brash
you.
He was on Brash Teen.
Yeah.
Because Brash Teen is what Ronan became after a few of us left. Yeah, who's super fun. I love Ed so much. I know for me, I always liked being in class with someone on a house team because secretly I can be like, all right, I want to compete with that person.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be – like, they're funny and I have a lot of respect for it. I want to make sure I can do what they do
because
I want to be in a house team. So I have to measure myself somehow.
Yeah.
So Jesse Neal was very funny and great. I was like, good. Now I can see if I can pull off the same stuff he can pull off sort of as my little like dirty little competitor comes out of me a little bit. But I think that's healthy. It's a great way to, like, get better at improv, the thing you love.
Yeah. It's always great to have, like, those aspirational people who you're like, wow, they do it. They get on that stage.
Yeah.
They have that. They have their voice.
And you're not trying to defeat them. You're just trying to match them.
Oh, no, I'm trying to defeat them.
You're trying to defeat them?
Yeah.
Oh, well, you're winning. Yeah, I think many people have followed in your path, I think, behind.
I'm pretty mean, just so you know.
Oh, I know. I know that wrath. we were rolling in. But, yeah, I was only there for, like, a few months. And then, like, half of us – remember we're in that email chain? The email chain was called Podcast Update or whatever. Or it was like a GroupMe chain. Because I think because there were a lot of changes happening only a few months in, and a few of us were real nerds about it and had a year to the tracks. And then, like, you know, if, like, Sarah Grace Wellborn heard through the grapevine this and then this and that.
Like, oh, this person's moving to the weekend.
Weekend.
Who do we think's going to get pulled up? I mean, it was, like, just endless things. And then, like, Ronan was decimated.
And one day, three people sent emails in a row. You're like, Podcast Update. I'm going to Herald. I'm leaving. Like, I can't. Yeah. I'm not here anymore. It was like Paul, Sarah Grace, Wellborn, and I all got moved up to Herald.
Mm-hmm.
Then Todd Bieber stepped down, like, the next day, too.
Yeah.
Because he got an opportunity in L.A., the real winner. And then there were only four of you.
I know. It was intense.
I feel so bad because I love that team so much. And,
yeah.
But the new team, Brash Team, was such a killer team.
We had – yeah.
I loved everyone on that team.
And I think for me, like, personally, because obviously – even though this podcast is about you, it's also deeply about me. Like that was the best thing that could have happened to me because suddenly I went from being like the terrified newbie to being like, oh no, I've got to get my shit together because there are new people coming on this team.
Now it's your team.
And I think that like that switch helped me personally be like, okay, Beth, you belong here. Get it together.
That makes me feel good.
Yeah.
I always feel bad because it wasn't our choice. We just got an email saying you go here now. But like, but I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
I'm glad it was empowering.
And I think Brash Teen was a great team, and you guys were all very ready to go, and you, like, killed Herald Night, so.
No, I destroyed Herald Night.
Yeah. It doesn't even exist anymore.
It doesn't exist anymore. It was like, so bad was that people stopped coming.
No. And then Monique came up and joined
Monique
you.
Monique followed me very shortly. Yeah. Yep.
So that's great.
Yeah.
Well,
I moved up with Sarah Grace Wellborn. Paul went to a different team. Sarah Grace Wellborn went to some kid, and I was so happy because I love Sarah Grace.
Mm-hmm.
And me leaving was like, oh, I don't get to play with Sarah Grace anymore. That made me unhappy. And then when she was like, oh, I'm coming on the same team, I'm like, yay.
So
I played together. But then she ended up going to the weekend anyway. And she's great to play with. I haven't played with her in a while.
Yeah.
And then Mo came later. I was like, oh, good, Mo is back. So it's like.
So surely being filtered through.
Yeah, but that also goes to the fact that that team, I always had a rapport with someone.
Yeah.
Because the other people on the team was like Keaton Patty, Mike Kelton, James III. And like Chris Wiener was the one I maybe knew the least. I knew her from the indie scene. She's one. And then Matt Mayer, too, was on that team, Papa Mayer. And he was on that team. And I didn't know him well either, but he was the best. He was such a great. He was a veteran, a real leader. He was a great guy.
Yeah.
And then, but I knew a lot of the, I knew the rest of them all from like Torco. It's like Andy Bustillos then later joined us. I knew him from Torco.
Mm-hmm.
And like, it was just like, oh, we all know each other. We played together for so long already.
Yeah.
That's like, oh, good. So doing a Herald, so let's just do a Herald. Yeah, versus in the new team, Party City, is like, oh, these are all new people to me.
Yeah.
Let's create a rapport from scratch. Let's do this. Let's just sand each other. Let's build it. And we're still fresh babies, so we're still building that. And that's a whole fun experience.
And now you're like a crazy veteran Herald player.
Yeah, I mean, not super veteran. When Matt Mayer was on the team, I think it was like year five or year six for him or something.
Mm-hmm.
I've only been, this is just like year three for me. So I'm not there yet, but I'm a Jedi Knight, not a Jedi Master.
Well, looping back around really quickly, where before we talked about Ronan.
Yeah.
Beautiful, beautiful Ronan.
Beautiful Ronan.
Such a good team picture.
Yeah. Didn't Chris Scott make us also a fan picture of that? I think speaking Chris Scott again.
Oh, yeah.
Remember that cool? Because we had a great team picture. And then someone randomly shared, I think it was Chris Scott, shared another Ronan picture. And it was a cool, like, fan art we had.
Yeah.
It was very fun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
Apparently Chris Scott is very important to me, and I didn't know it.
Yeah, I just want to make sure everyone knows how he's touched everyone's life, improv life somehow.
So even though we've just ended the audition process, and technically it's not going to happen for another year, like, what are your thoughts about auditioning and people feeling this process? It's a hard process. It's an exhausting process.
Yeah.
Do you have any thoughts that you would throw out to people who are maybe already thinking about next year or are reflecting back on this past year?
You know what, Beth? I do have thoughts. Thank God, right? Imagine if I didn't have thoughts.
I know. It really would put you on the spot. I just don't want you to lie.
No, I've been lying this whole time. Stefan's somewhere else. I'm an actor. But anyway, auditions are very stressful. It's the worst. Everyone hates it. But it's a necessary evil.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, they see a lot of scenes. How many people auditioned this last year? It's like something like 800 people, maybe like 750, something like that. So I think they see 750 scenes. That's how the math works. If everyone does two scenes. Or is it 1,500 scenes? I don't know. It's one of whoever knows math. I didn't take math in college, if you're listening from before the thing.
Everyone pull out your calculator.
Pull out your calculators.
Beep, beep, boop,
I think
beep.
It's something like that. So let's say they have to see 750 scenes in 3 days. Let's say that's what the first round of auditions are. It's a lot of scenes.
Mm-hmm.
And what they're seeing for a lot of it, like 80, maybe 85%, hell, maybe 90% of it, are scaredy cats who are talking about doing something else somewhere else that they wish they could be doing right now. That's the subconscious scaredy cat improviser coming out, being like, oh, an audition, oh, start a scene, be like, hey, look at Greg over there. Yeah, look at Greg over there. Two people talking about Greg over there.
Mm-hmm.
Screw Greg. Get into you. Look at you. I look at you, Beth, and say, hey, Beth, you are this.
Mm-hmm.
I am this.
Mm-hmm.
Let's do this together. And let's make sure.
We're making that salad.
Yeah, we're making that salad.
Mm-hmm.
And be like, let's see, are you the dressing or am I the dressing?
Mm-hmm.
Who's the ranch here? Is it you or is it me?
Mm-hmm.
And then we say, oh, that's kind of funny about you. You're ranch. Now I'm going to keep being salad, and you keep pouring a little more ranch on that salad.
Mm-hmm.
And then there you go. That's it. Active scene work, exploiting someone's behavior. And it keeps between two people. The best way to do that, a best way to keep in mind is remember to have a strong emotional commitment to what you're doing. If I start a scene and be like, hey, it's raining. A great way to turn yourself into ranch was your opportunity in that audition scene, that Supreme Audition scene, is to have a big emotional response to it. It's raining. Oh, hell yeah. And then they're like, okay, why is this person really excited by the fact that it's raining? Let's explore that.
Yeah.
Boom, game, explored person, boom. It's that fear puts a wall in front of you and your emotional choice because emotional choice is expository.
Mm-hmm.
You have to expose yourself a little bit. You expose your heart a little bit. And that's just something to get used to. So when you're on the indie scene practicing and playing and doing your shows, remember, did I show my heart tonight?
Mm-hmm.
Did I play? Did I do an emotional choice? Did I cry tonight? Did I feel about something? Because
mm-hmm.
that's something I have to get used to on a regular basis if I'm really serious about doing, like, you know, if I really want to be my best improviser I can be.
Mm-hmm.
You have to do that. And a lot of times in auditions, there's a wall and people don't do that. And that's the biggest mistake.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's my thoughts on auditions.
You certainly did have a point of view about that.
Always.
No joke.
Emotional point of view. Opinion.
I think – so when you think about – something that I talked about in my episode was I kind of see like game playing at one end of a – for better or worse, this is my opinion – like gamey playing at one end of the spectrum and like emotional playing at the other end of the spectrum.
Sure.
And like the best improvisers meet in the middle.
Yeah.
Like when you think about kind of like how people play, where do you – what do you see and where do you see yourself in that spectrum or that color wheel or whatever you want to – however you want to think about it.
Yeah. I'd like to think I'm an emotional player, but I think I'm more of a heady player. Mm-hmm. Sort of like the actorly and the writerly. Mm-hmm. The writerly knows how to write out the game moves like a writer. The actorly just feels and lets the emotion drive him through. I think maybe I'm more actorly. I think I'm more actorly, but I can do writerly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think depending on who I'm playing with, it dictates whether I do one or the other. Now, on that, I believe having a strong emotional point of view is a very important part of game. Because
mm-hmm.
there's two points of view. There's the logical point of view and the emotional point of view. Emotional point of view is how you feel about something. Logical point of view is how you're supposed to feel about something. So that's like, oh, like we have a logic just of people. So like, oh, we know we're supposed to be doing X, Y, and Z, but I'm feeling about doing X, Y, and Z too. So that's an emotional point of view, logical point mm-hmm. of view. And I feel that the writerly is maybe better at the logical point of view, and the actorly is better at the emotional point of view. So as far as me personally, I mean, I don't know. Give me your thoughts. What do you think? I think maybe emotional. I don't know.
I think emotional, because I also feel like you're very character. Like,
sure.
You're
like,
a character-driven
yeah,
person. Because I think, like, some kid for a while, and honestly, I've been less – it has been more challenging for me to watch shows in the new space.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't seen Party City play yet,
right.
And I didn't see some kid play basically in the new space.
Well, usually we're always rehearsing. We're usually warming up or getting notes around the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why it's hard to see the other teams play.
Yeah.
No, I'm in the same boat. Yeah.
But I think that, like, some kid for a long time was doing, like, character painting.
Yeah, for a long time.
Yeah, and mm-hmm. I think that, like, that really suited you. Like, I felt like that was a great –
We were a character-driven team, yeah. And I'm like, great, I can do this. I like that. Yeah, I love
it.
I love being a big, wacky character. It's just fun, right?
Yes.
And I'm a big guy with a big old beard, for those of you that don't know how I look. And I can
do
all sorts with that. You know, I can be a weird trucker who loves ballet or something like that. Huh? A little breaking the expectations there.
Indeed.
You know, and I like that, yeah. So, yeah, I think I'm more of a character-driven player.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So, Stefan, it's about time for us to sort of wrap this up.
I wondered
if you had any last thoughts or words of wisdom or just things you wanted to put out in the universe about improv or yourself, you know, like that you wanted to secret, you know, like the secret you can like put it out in the universe.
Sure. I'll say two things.
Okay.
One was based on something I said on Facebook the other night that I'll reiterate, which is semi-related, not related. And then another is a bigger thing about improv. So someone said on Facebook last night, And this is, I think, a thought we all have. Hi, I'm asking for a friend. Do you have to hang out at bars to be involved with the community, to be involved with the comedy community? Do you have to go out and hang out and be a very outgoing extrovert, is what they're called, right?
Mm-hmm.
And you have to be an outgoing extrovert to hang out, be at bars and hang out in the community. Does that make you feel part of the community, the comedy community? And I don't know, for me, I always had a lot of anxiety on that kind of stuff. And I think a lot of us share that anxiety because as
mm-hmm.
performers – It's a fun community, but it's also like a weird community. We're not the most emotionally stable people, so it's like I know I have a lot of social anxieties, and it's hard for me to go to like parties, like big settings and stuff by myself. Usually, when I go to places, I go with people and sort of pre-plan. That's how I like it, because you know, anxiety. But I think that's not what makes you part of a community. What makes you part of the comedy community is the work. Going to rehearsals, loving rehearsals. I loved class. I did a lot of classes, a lot of places. I did UCB, a lot of indie classes elsewhere. I was addicted to classes. I was at two or three improv classes at the same time sometimes. So I loved class. Then I did rehearsal, two or three rehearsals a week, loved class. Did shows. I think my record, I did four shows in Triple Crown in one night. I did like the 8 o'clock, 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock, and 11 o'clock. And because I wanted to hit it like a stand-up.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I was done, I left. And I always felt a little awkward about that. I wanted to hang out, but I felt I have a weird anxiety where it's like, all right, I'm done. I don't know what to do with myself. It's awkward. I'm going to go home. I'm going to Subway where I know what I'm supposed to be doing. So I would leave, and I'd always feel like, man, should I be? Am I missing out because I'm not – am I offending people? I don't want to offend anybody. It has nothing to do with other people. I love everyone. I love everyone in the community. And I have comfort in the fact that I think a lot of people feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of us sort of have that thought. So for you out there, if you have those same thoughts, it's okay. Don't worry about it. As long as you're very pleasant to others, as long as you really care about the work and you really love the fact that you're doing shows and doing good comedy for an audience and they really enjoy it, then you're part of the community. That's the community you're in, and that puts you part of a community. Not how social can you be and that kind of stuff, and not how who you know. You know, there's so many people I don't know, but I'll meet them later when we work together, you know, and then that'll be fun because we'll get to meet people later, you know. So that's my thoughts on that. And then my other thoughts as far as improv goes is, again, love the work. You should have as much fun doing a show at a smaller venue with your indie, with your friends that you got comfortable with. You should have as much joy doing that as doing like a live HBO special. Not that I've done anything like that, but like you know, like doing a big, like if you go on a USO tour because you're a big famous comedian versus you're like just getting out of the house, just getting out of the office to take this improv class and doing a show, they should be just as fun as each other. So don't feel like you're going to have a better time doing something else somewhere else. That's more of a you thing. So you should just really enjoy the improv. For those of you out there that are maybe a little frustrated sometimes, things like that, love the fact that you can do a show and just love the art form and just do the show. And that's my thoughts on improv.
And that was a long-form conversation. Tune into the next episode when Stefan Chouette will be your host. Thank you, Stefan, for being here and for sharing so many interesting things and just keeping this conversation going. It was a real pleasure.
Thank you for having me, Beth.
Yeah, and thanks to Sophie, who is our technical guru, who's making this all sound amazing. So I guess, I don't know, just keep on provin' out there.
Keep on provin' now. Say like Reba McEntire.
Oh, keep on provin'.
There you go. Keep on provin', sugar.
Thank you so much. See you soon.
You've been listening to the UCB Longform Conversations podcast on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. If you like this podcast, please subscribe and review at itunes.com/UCB Comedy. The opinions expressed in this episode are those of the comedians talking and don't necessarily reflect the opinions of UCB Theater or Training Center. Find cutting-edge comedy videos on YouTube and Vimeo at UCB Comedy. Find our live shows at ucbtheater.com and connect with us on social media at UCB Comedy.